You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Welcome to the Life on the Stage podcast, your home to in-depth conversations with leaders and disruptors in the entertainment industry. All content you are about to hear came from a live talkback event hosted at the Jacob Burns Film Center, a nonprofit five-screen cinema and education center located in Pleasantville, New York, presented in partnership with the Entertainment Community Fund. One of the most successful suburban art houses in the country, the Jacob Burns celebrates film as a vehicle for entertainment, education, and inspiration. This episode features some of the key creative team behind the Broadway musical How to Dance in Ohio, a heartwarming musical based on a true story that follows a group of young adults on the autism spectrum preparing for a spring formal dance. The show is praised for its uplifting message, its celebration of neurodiversity, and its talented cast, which features seven autistic actors. Moderated by five-time Tony-winning Broadway producer and co-founder of the Broadway Podcast Network, Dori Berenstein, let's begin.
So we're so excited to have with us the film director, Alexander Shiva, the composer of the musical, Jacob Yandura, producer, Ben Holtzman, script supervisor and assistant musical director, Nicole D'Angelo, and the director of the musical, Sammy Canold. Let's start by talking for a moment about the film. I would love for you to share with everybody how you came across the story and what led you to make this documentary film.
So thank you so much. And it's so fun to see it on a screen and to see it after I've seen the musical a few times, which I haven't seen the movie, I think, in 2 or 3 years. So it's really cool. I had very good friends who have a daughter who at the time was 16, and she's high needs and she's nonverbal. And they kept saying, there's so much about little kids. There's nothing about kids when they grow up. Like, what happens? What happens when you're a young adult? And I kept trying to figure out a way to tell that story. And then I was at a conference and I met a woman named Sandra Williams, who was a self-advocate, and she was a client of Dr. Amigo's. She said, you have to come meet my therapist, Dr. Amigo, blah, blah, and he's doing this dance. And I went to Ohio and I knew immediately that was the right way to tell the story, and actually met Toby Shimon, who's the editor, who we sort of started before we even started shooting. We started talking about it and figuring out what it was going to be, and just got lucky, very, very lucky.
And you had a really interesting creative process, I believe, before you started to shoot, because it was very important to you to get everyone comfortable with the fact that there will be cameras. Can you talk about that?
So when we got there, the first thing we did was Dr. Amigo held sort of a town hall, and it was all the clients and all the parents, and everyone came and asked questions. Why are you doing this? What do you want? What do you want with us? And why are you here? And everyone got to ask questions. And then the entire first week we were there, he would have half the group, and then he would send in one person at a time or a few people at a time and just ask us questions. So Jessica came in with 4 pages of notes and questions and was like, I want to know this and this and this and this, and it was a funny thing because we started actually casting the documentary when they were interviewing us. So, they wanted to touch the camera and they wanted to, see what the boom did. It was really cool. And I think everyone got comfortable, and that was how we began.
And how long did you shoot for?
3 months. So we actually moved to Columbus, and I was commuting to Columbus because I had 2 very small children. So the crew was living in Columbus, and then I was there 3 to 4 days a week for 3 months. But it was amazing, amazing.
And Toby can weigh in on this as well, but I think that when you were in the editing room, the way that you approached trying to figure out how to tell the story is you started with the dance and worked backwards?
Yes. So we started looking at everything, and then the conversation was, I'm trying to remember it because I was thinking about it when we were watching, that there was something so, you had to understand what was important about Meredith walking in and saying hi. You had to know what everyone's moments were. Am I saying this right? Toby's nodding. Okay. You had to really understand what the payoffs were going to be. So we edited the dance first, and then we worked backwards.
And then, of course, you knew it was going to end up as a Broadway musical, right?
Of course. Yes. Well, actually, and I've said this to Jacob many times, I was so surprised when Jacob and Rekha reached out, because music was one of the hardest things we dealt with in the making of the movie. And we had, you know, when you make documentaries, you have focus screenings. So we had two focus screenings, 8 people each. It was a lot of editors, creative people came in, and the uniform statement, well, there were two. One was, you know, your music is terrible, right? And we did not. And the other one at all. And the other one was, I have no idea where I am. And the first time people said, I have no idea where I am, we thought, okay, we'll change this. And then the second screening, hopefully they'll know where they are. Still had no idea. My husband was like, I have a great idea. Let's call it How to Dance in Ohio. And I was like, okay, that's perfect. So, but the music, we actually had to play the movie once in Poughkeepsie. We did this at the associate editors, and we played it without any music, just to see, like, where does it actually need music? Because our music had become, it was our way in to understanding the characters, but a lot of it didn't need to be there anymore, or was the wrong tone. So, yeah, anyway, long story short, the idea of it being a musical was bananas. But it's amazing. And it's amazing.
So enter Jacob, who just happened to find the movie on HBO at the time.
That's correct.
Tell your story.
So I'm from Columbus, Ohio. And I was looking, you know, for a film to watch one night, and I saw the title, and it immediately jumped out to me. I thought it was beautiful, and I went, I'm from Ohio. And I read the synopsis, and it says, in Columbus, I'm from Columbus. And around that same time, my sister was diagnosed as autistic within that year. The film came out in 2015, and I think I saw it in 2016. And Maria, who was 17 at the time, was given, like, the proper diagnosis. So I said, I immediately have to watch this. And in the first 5 minutes, it just completely sang to me, because it's all the ideas of human connection, and I think every great musical is about a community, and this was a beautiful community of people, and I wrote to Rebecca and my agent, and an essay of an email saying we have to do this, and then our agent connected us with you, which was super awesome, and he gave us our blessing, and we started writing spec material.
And you have a partner?
Yes. Yes, so my songwriting partner, Rebecca Grimalosik, we've been together since, gosh, I think like 10 years now. We met in grad school at NYU, and she's also from Ohio, which is really funny, but we didn't meet until in grad school. So she did the book and the lyrics for the show.
And that you just happen to know a very talented producing team.
I did.
And Sammy Lopez, right?
Yeah. So me and my college freshman roommate, Sammy Lopez, and best friend, we were both working in two different producing offices, and we're just starting to find projects for our own to produce. And what we wanted to do first was to meet with artists, because we both come from a creative background, and we wanted to find our community of artists and storytellers that we wanted to work with, and find something that we can work on from the ground up. We're not the type of producers who like to find an already finished musical and then produce it. We really like to start from the beginning. And we had seen a show that Jacob and Rebecca had written that was off-Broadway that one of our good friends was in. And we just loved their material. We thought the writing was really witty and the songs were really fun. And it was a TYA show, which is Theater for Young Audiences. But there was just something about it that stuck with us. And so our friend who was in the show connected us with Jacob and Rebecca. And we just sort of hit it off right away when we met. And we had very similar feelings about the industry and the types of stories that we were interested in telling. And we kind of left that meeting with, like, if anyone has an idea, let's connect. And I think it was like maybe a month or two later that he watched the documentary and he told Sammy and I about it, and we watched it and were also immediately hooked.
And then you get to the part that's just very surreal. What producing office did you work in?
Yes. So at the time I was working for Hal Prince, who was my mentor. For those who don't know, he's a legendary Broadway producer and director who did Phantom of the Opera and West Side Story, the original, and the original Fiddler on the Roof, Cabaret. I mean, you could just go on and on. Any fantastic musical that happened in the last 70 years, he very likely was involved with in some way or another. And we were opening a show on Broadway called Prince of Broadway, which was a compendium of his entire career, showcasing all of the pieces that he developed over the years. And his golden rule was he always liked to have the meeting for his next project the day after his last project opened. He was always focused on the future. And we were getting ready to open Prince of Broadway, and he didn't have a new project yet. So he was starting to think, oh, who are the writers I like to work with? What am I interested in doing? And he casually mentioned that he was interested in exploring autism in a musical because his granddaughter is autistic. And I was very ambitious and said, I think I have the project for you. And I brought Jacob and Rebecca up to meet Hal. And then the craziest part is you heard Alexandra mention that she has a friend who had a 16-year-old daughter who was in, that was the reason she was interested in telling this story. And that was Hal's granddaughter.
Doesn't usually happen.
So crazy.
Ultimate serendipity. And I love this line that Hal used to say, if you want to make musicals, you have to make history. Be daring. And that's what you all did. I mean, because this is a groundbreaking musical, groundbreaking film. And you know, to get your launch on this story with Hal Prince.
I like to say it was my doctorate in learning how to make musicals, because Jacob and Rebecca would come up to Hal's office like every few weeks with new material. And I just watched how he pushed and prodded them and just pushed them to think outside of the box of what a musical is or what was conventional or what seemed like the right way to do things. It just became so clear to me when I was watching him work with them why he was able to do that with Stephen Sondheim and with Candor and Ebb and with Andrew Lloyd Webber. It just, he had this way of bringing out the best in artists. And as I got to work with him more, it wasn't just writers. I mean, choreographers. He gave Bob Fosse his first job, Susan Stroman, Michael Bennett. And you can look at the designers that all got their starts with Hal Prince. I mean, that was his entire legacy, was he was always looking for the next new artist and helping them to become the best that they could. And I think that's why he was so excited to work with Jacob and Rebecca, because he saw that as his next opportunity to do that.
And it was the coolest experience. I mean, working with Hal, I always say, like, my armpits have never been wetter, because it's just like, okay, yes, what do you want me to do? I'll do anything, you know? But he said he would look at me and he goes, Jacob, be Bernstein. And what he meant by that was create your own sound, you know, try to just be unique and be daring. And it was the coolest experience. And I'm so grateful for that. And, you know, and what was really cool, and he said, when we start this musical, I'd like every show that I work on, I start with opening number. And he goes, you're going to work on that until the day before you open, which we did. but he goes, that's where you find the tone. And that's where, you know, like Andrew Lloyd Webber had his idea that he wanted to start in complete silence with Phantom of the Opera. And then, you know, the big chandelier crash, you know, and he goes, that sets the whole tone for the whole show. So that was so cool to like kind of work from there and then start.
But unfortunately, we lost Hal Prince in 2019, and you then turned to Sammy to step into those gigantic shoes and to take on continuing Hal's dream for this show. Could you talk about what your reaction was to the film, to the idea of the musical, and also what you inherited from Hal?
Absolutely. So I came to the show via Jacob, and we had coffee, and he was telling me about the project, and I'd seen the film and loved the film. And my brother's autistic, and I was very passionate about the subject matter. And when I heard that he was making a musical and that they were looking for a director to pick up where Hal had left off, I was like, please pick me. What do I have to do? And I think that what initially, jumped out to me, because I got excited about this show before I even got to read or listen to it, was the idea that the mission of it was that it was equal parts a work of art and a work of advocacy. And I think that that is something that is so true of, in the 4 years since then, what we strive to make. And so I interviewed for the job and got the job. And I think it was such a huge honor and also wildly intimidating to pick up the work of this extraordinary legend and try to honor that, where he left off. And I think that one of the things that was extremely helpful in that was that Ben gave me three copies of Hal's script of the show with his notes in the margin, and also the recordings of the meetings that Hal had had with Jacob and Rebecca and Ben and Sammy. And those were really my North Star in figuring out how to create a world around the show. And I think that, it was such an incredible lesson to be able to say, here are the musings of this legend who for me was such a personal hero, as a young director. And how do you interpret that while also creating anew and creating something that felt true to me? That was the most amazing gift and such an amazing journey.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Important to everyone was you would cast the seven autistic actors with seven autistic actors. And so can you talk about that creative process?
Yeah, it was, it always was a given for me that we would cast authentically. And I think that when we brought on our amazing casting team, they were so on board. The whole team was so on board. But we did, when we sort of started talking about putting out a audition notice, did hear a lot of people saying, I don't think you're going to find who you're looking for. And our response was basically, well, then we won't do the show because we're not interested in actors putting on autism. Part of the mission of the show is amplifying and creating space for individuals to tell their own stories. And so we did that casting call. It was sort of during the end of the pandemic, and so it was a virtual casting call. And part of the joy of that was that it was truly global in nature. We had someone from Italy audition, we, received videos, and we did some callbacks on Zoom. And out of that casting search, we cast seven people. And it was for a reading at the time. And we thought, you know, oh, of the seven, hopefully, you know, two or three end up in the, you know, long-term version of the show on Broadway one day. And all seven of them are the seven you just saw on Broadway in that video clip. They've stayed together. So it's, you know, we were so lucky to find an extraordinary group of seven. And I think what's most important is that from that casting search alone, we could have cast the show three times over. There was such an amazing talent pool. So to all those people who said, you aren't going to find who you're looking for, they were wrong.
Nicole, you wear so many hats on this show. It's really incredible. You're an assistant music director. You also play in the pit.
Sub in the pit.
Sub in the pit.
Is this on?
It's on. And, is it? Yes. And you were invaluable to the team in guiding them to have authentic autistic characters. And so they bestowed on you yet another title, script consultant.
Yes.
So I was on your TikTok channel, which is amazing, and you all should check it out. Really, really extraordinary. And I was very drawn to the story that you told about somebody who saw the show and mentioned to you the line that really popped for them, "Nothing about us without us." And since we were just talking about casting, could you talk about that line?
Yeah, that so the way I got involved with the show was I auditioned. I was part of that casting pool, and in a most autistic manner, missed my callback, just spaced on the time the callback was due, and thought my life was over. I was like, oh, that, like, I knew that project was going places, and I got a call like way later, and they said, you know, we're looking for a music assistant. We'd love to include more autistic people on the team, and just as fate had it, I got to join the team. But I have an extensive history working in autism advocacy, and part of that advocacy that I've been doing for a long time has been advocating for authentic casting and for autistic people to be included in the tellings of our own stories. And so that led me to becoming the script consultant as one of the autistic people in the room who wasn't on stage, who was behind the table. I was able to, you know, watch from my perspective, and I was able to say things like, oh, you know, I don't think that's how an autistic person would say that. Or I could say, like, actually, this is the preferred language in the community. And ultimately, having autistic people in the creative process is, I think, the key and the cornerstone of the Nothing About Us Without Us, which is the motto of the autistic community. It's a pinnacle of disability justice. It's just the thought that in order for our stories to be told, we need to be a part of it. So I'm so happy to be on the team in all of the different ways.
Yes. And in the opening clip, you heard the line that opens the show: if you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person, which is such a brilliant line that Dr. Migo says in the film. I would love for you all to weigh in on a lot of groundbreaking things that you all did to make for a very unique, actually, on Broadway, welcoming environment for the cast, for the crew, and also for the audience. Can you all jump in and share what you did and talk about the questionnaire and all that?
Yeah, I can start. So Nicole, in addition to all of the hats mentioned, is also a member of our access team. And so we have an access team that consists of a rotating group of autistic folks who are working in various areas of the production, not on stage. So that's also been something that we've been trying to implement in our process from the early days, is just where can we find space for these voices and these perspectives to help not only make the show better, but also make the room better, make the theater better, make the experience better for all people involved. And one of the major contributions from our access team was the idea of putting out an access needs survey, which we've done before every process that we've started. And essentially, we send out a very short survey to all of our team members, autistic and non-autistic, and sort of say, what do you need to do your best work in the room? What are things that would prevent you from doing your best work in the room? And what are any specific access needs that you want to share with us? And that really gave us the opportunity to know how to set up these rooms for the company that we were working with. And surprisingly, the people who had the strongest reaction were the Broadway veterans who were like, oh my God, nobody's ever asked me what I needed to do my work before. And, you know, some of them had access needs. Some of them needed a script with larger text, or if the room was too cold, they couldn't sing. And so that sort of became the bedrock of our process, is sort of just being upfront with offering the opportunity for our company to share what they need. And I think that spirit has carried through the entire process, where now our company feels very comfortable, sometimes too comfortable, coming to the lead producers or anyone on the leadership team and expressing what they need. And from my point of view, I don't think I'll ever do a show and not send out an access needs survey again, no matter what the subject matter. And I think what I've learned most of all is that it creates an environment where your company feels valued and your employees feel seen and heard and understood. And I think in this industry for too long, there's been a mentality of you should be so grateful to have your job on Broadway. There's 400 people waiting outside who would happily take your job. Be quiet and don't make trouble. I think that what this show has given me as a producer the gift to do is to throw that out the window and say, no, I'm going to talk to the people that I'm working with, and I'm going to hear from them and make sure that I'm making this room and this experience, which is a very hard job. Working on Broadway is no easy job, to make it as comfortable and as accommodating as possible, because what I think we've all learned from this production is that accessibility benefits everybody. Everyone benefits from accessibility.
I just wanted to say that also what's so interesting is that it really, this idea goes all the way back to when we went to Ohio, and Jacob and Rebecca and I went to Ohio to sort of pass the torch and say, here, you know, here's the community and get to know them. And one of the things I love so much about the musical is that it's not, they went to get their own source material. So it's like the movie's part of it, but then they met everyone there. And one of the things, they had their own town hall. And one of the things that people said was, they were really upset that they weren't featured more in the documentary, and that they had felt left out, and that they had wished that it was more ensemble. And I feel like you started from that very core of like listening to the community and what they wanted in terms of creating the musical too.
We did. I mean, most of the musical was from that night, and it was incredibly invaluable to us, and meeting the families, meeting the clients, and it was huge. We loved it.
Sammy, can you weigh in based on that questionnaire, what you learned, how that impacted how you set the room, ran the room?
Yeah, I think of this in sort of two buckets. One is, for me as a director, a lot of the feedback that we got from that survey in terms of how I could help the actors in the process of staging and rehearsing was that what the majority of our company wanted from me was very clear, very specific information. Sometimes I work with actors who will say, don't tell me to go to four, don't tell me to then go left, don't tell me to then go to five. I want to just, you know, figure out the scene and find the scene. These actors, by and large, wanted me to say, can you go to eight? Then can you open the door? Then can you go over to the window? Then can you go to seven? And that was really helpful guide for me to know how the direction I give can allow people to do their best work if I give it in a specific way. So that was the guide, you know, directorially. But then in addition to that, I think of, you know, and Nicole can speak to this probably better than I can, the changes that we ended up making in the room based on the results of the survey, I think of as like hundreds of small details. You know, one of my favorite examples of this is like we got a response on the survey that a member of our company had a sensitivity to scented soap, which some autistic individuals do. And as a result, our company management team went through the entire Belasco Theater and replaced all the scented soap with unscented soap. And that seems like a small, inconsequential thing, but it's like 100 things like that thing that allow the company to collectively do their work because the scented soap is not what's stopping them in the middle of their day. And so it's really a credit to our access team and, you know, our stage manager, our company manager, our general manager, everybody in all areas of the production who said, okay, you know, we're going to, you know, go the extra mile in these different ways to make sure that everybody has what they need. But I don't know if, you know, for access team wise, you want to talk about that or also, you know, some of the notes that you gave us, which were really helpful.
Oh, yeah. So I think something that was really important to us, other than making the room accessible selfishly for ourselves as well as the other company members, was that the people whose stories we're telling are welcome in seeing the stories. Because what's happened historically, I mean, there's only ever been one other representation of autism on Broadway, and that's The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is a show that's designed to teach people about the autistic experience by heightening lights, by heightening sound, so that neurotypical audience members can understand what it's like to go through the process of sensory overload. But for somebody who already experiences sensory overload, that makes the show completely inaccessible. And so that story, which was about autism, which was an autistic story, was not accessible to autistic audiences. And I think TDF might have had one autism-friendly performance. And so it was important to us that every single performance be welcoming to the community that we're representing. And so a lot of the access team work that we did was in audience accessibility. I helped develop a sensory advisory guide, which gives audience members a heads up about, you know, if you're sensitive to reflective lights, you might be sensitive to this part of the show. Or if you're sensitive to nightclub sounds, you might be sensitive to this part of the show. We have cool down spaces in the theater, but we also built in the accessibility to the show itself. And so a lot of the notes that I was giving to Sammy and the directing team would be along the lines of, like, sometimes it would be really silly things. Like, I remember in Syracuse, we have a scene where a character comes out with a steering wheel. And when we were in Syracuse, he came out with the steering wheel and it was metal. And I immediately was like, nope, that can't, because it was reflecting like right into my eyes. It was completely blinding me. So you wouldn't even think, like, when you're buying a steering wheel, who thinks like, oh, that's going to be reflective and upset audience members. So it would be notes like that, or it'd be bigger notes like, maybe let's not have the disco ball spin and reflect light into people's eyes. So it could be big notes, it could be small notes. The one I was most thankful for is we have like this scoreboard. And at one point, some of the letters flipped down on the scoreboard, and it was very, very loud. And so I loved that, like, throughout previews, Sammy said, then we're not gonna have that effect. We'll just have the letters already flipped until we can fix it, so that...
I was also not okay with that. Yeah.
It was very shocking. And so I was really thankful to be on a team where they said, well, then we're not doing that. If it's upsetting, we're not going to do it.
But even like with orchestrations and different sounds and cymbals and different timbres of sounds that have, you know, that might, you know, trigger some things for people. So that was very helpful.
I do think it's important to take a moment and focus on the fact that getting a show to Broadway is almost impossible. And when you have a team, how many of you are making your Broadway debut? And how many cast members are making their Broadway debut?
It's 42 in the whole, 42 people in the building are making their Broadway debuts.
So you have a musical that is not derivative. An original musical is rare. It really is rare, and it makes things that much harder. You have a fairly, very talented, extremely talented, but new group of talent coming to Broadway. And how long did it take you from the moment you watched that musical to open on Broadway?
6 years.
Yeah.
Is that right? 6 years?
Yeah. You know, that's really extraordinary. And Ben, could you just take us through just quickly the jumping points, because it doesn't just happen. There's a whole creative process, a whole development. Both of you, if you could chime in on that trajectory.
So I first just want to comment on what you're saying. And I think for most people, the idea of producing a show with this many Broadway debuts is like a recipe for disaster. But I think me and my producing team, that's funny because A Recipe for Disaster is a song that was cut from the show. I didn't mean to do that. But I saw that as like a positive. I just think that audiences are looking for new perspectives and want to hear new voices and new ideas. And I think that that's what was so enticing to me about producing this show. But the process, so I think you started writing in 2018. We did like a private reading in the office in 2019 just to hear a first draft, but just to start hearing it out loud. And then the pandemic happened. Well, first Hal passed away, and then the pandemic happened, which was a series of unfortunate events for us. But we brought Sammy on like in March of 2020, I think is when
it was the week before.
It was sort of perfect. I think like I'm producing some other shows, and the pandemic was horrible for those shows, but it was great for Ohio because it really gave the authors and Sammy like the time to dig in and get to work and take what we had was a first draft and really pick it apart and put it back together. Because by October 2021, we were able to do our first reading, which Sammy talked about, which is where we found our cast. And then from that reading, we were able to secure an out-of-town production at Syracuse Stage for the following year. So we did a workshop in June of 2022 in preparation for Syracuse in September of 2022. And then after we saw the show at Syracuse, we had always anticipated doing another production before we came to New York, but we all kind of sat in the audience and were like, oh, wow, this is really good and maybe is more ready than we thought. And so we did one more workshop in New York City in February of 2023. And then we got the Broadway Theater on my birthday, June 16th of 2023. And then now we're on Broadway.
It rarely happens that way. This show is so meant to be. And the reaction to the show has been extraordinary. How many people here have seen it? All right. Well, Belasco Theater, get your tickets now. You want to see this and share it with family and friends right away. I do think that you have set so many firsts for Broadway. This is a show that is landmark in so many ways, and it also is just so emotional and beautiful and, you know, I think beautifully inspired by your film. And if you could all just take a moment before we close and just talk about, you know, if you had any interactions with audience members that you'd want to share just about their reaction to the show.
I have a really good one, so I'll go first and then get off the mic. I was my producing partner was in line at the merch stand, and this young woman just started talking to her and explained that she was here to see the show. She was from Idaho, and she had never left the state of Idaho before. And she was autistic, and she knew that she had to come to New York City just to see this show.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's not unique either. I've been talking to somebody online who said the same thing. She lives in the Midwest, and she's never left the Midwest, and she's planned a trip herself to travel independently to New York. So that's not an isolated incident either, which is really cool. But my favorite audience interaction, it wasn't even an interaction, I was just being creepy, but I was just being nosy. When I'm subbing the show, I watch the show on the screen. I have like a conductor screen, and I can see the front row behind the conductor. And the other day, I was watching the show I was watching the conductor, but I was watching the person behind her mostly. and at the end of the show, I saw her just leap to her feet, and she started happy stimming. She was just so ecstatic after the show, and I was able to recognize that that was somebody who just saw themselves represented on a stage for the first time in their lives. And it was so special to be able to watch that moment. And I've seen so many instances of that on the show. And I just know if I had had a show like this when I was like 15, 16, it would have been absolutely life-changing. So it's really cool to see that for younger people now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think what I love the most about this is how the community building isn't stopping at the end of the stage. It's reaching out into the audience. And, you know, when I do go see the show, I'm standing in the back and I just see audience members who don't know each other, but they introduce themselves to each other and they, you know, talk about the show. And I think what theater should do is spark conversation. And what I love about the show, it's just the beginning of the conversation. And seeing how these people all connect with each other and then reach out to me and are like, when can I have the sheet music? I need the sheet music, you know? And all it's the greatest gift.
And if you could imagine opening night, when it was time for the curtain call and the cast, you know, took their bows. I believe you joined, you were in the building, you were in the audience, and then the cast of your movie came out and stood next to their counterparts. It was so moving. It was so beautiful. That was genius producing, and very profound. I think I can think of no other better way to end tonight's Life on the Stage event than another clip from the Broadway musical. This is just a magnificent song. You're going to all go out humming it. Thank you, Jacob. But before we do that, I just want to thank Sammy and Nicole and Ben and Jacob, and Alexander, thank you for creating this in the first place, and Toby as well. Really, just so magnificent, and a story we'll never forget.
Thanks for listening. This event was organized as part of an ongoing live event series at the Jacob Burns Center called Life on the Stage, Conversation in Film, and is presented in partnership with the Entertainment Community Fund, a national human services organization that fosters stability and resiliency and provides a safety net for performing arts and entertainment professionals over their lifespan. Visit entertainmentcommunity.org to learn more. This podcast was produced by Broadway Podcast Network. For more information about the Jacob Burns Center and the Life on the Stage event series, visit vpn.fm/lifeonthestage.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.